participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers.
It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, we're Rahel and
Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. Israel is Real is putting a human face on all things Israel and telling the stories of ordinary people loving, supporting, and living in an extraordinary land. Israel is Real. Boker tov lekol ha-mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael v'Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. This is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. As a community-supported program, we depend on your support to stay on the air. We'd like to extend our thanks to all of those who have supported our efforts in helping to spread the good news about Israel, and we are very grateful to you all. We've raised so far $2,000 since we started in October, and our goal for this year is $5,600, and that means we are still doing fundraising, so we still need you out there for $3,600 more, so please keep the donations coming. And to find out how, you can visit our website at israelisrael.weebly.com, israelisrael.weebly.com, and you can email us at israelisrael1590@gmail.com, israelisrael1590@gmail.com. One of our sponsors is Vision.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's emails alerts and be informed about the Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website, www.nh4israel.org. That's www.newhampshireforisrael.org.
Thank you, Sonia, and thank you, Vision. We were thinking, you know, as it is the secular new year, we had our new year in September with Rosh Hashanah, but we're thinking about ways that as the new year 2010 starts, what are the kinds of things that we can do for Israel? And wondering if you've given any kind of thought to how you can put more of Israel into your life. For example, the easiest way is to buy Israeli products.
Like?
Like Israeli wine.
Okay.
Cosmetics, more. Such as put
Ahava.
Up by Ahava,
okay,
which means
Dead
love.
Sea.
Mm-hmm. Dead Sea skincare products. And how about there's some pharmaceuticals by Teva.
Right.
Teva, right? And there's shoes, very popular
sandals.
Shoe. Sandals. Yes, sandals, right? Israelis are always, we're always very particular. Sandals called Neot.
Right.
Neot.
Teva.
So there's a few ways that you can bring Israel into your life out here in the diaspora and in Israel too. And you could join at least one organization that stands for Israel and support it generously. Israel is Real, for example.
Right.
That's a good way. You can become more informed. You can write letters and you can respond to letters which are anti-Israel. That's another way. And you can also decide to visit Israel the best way. That's really the best way. And get really a one-on-one experience with an extraordinary land. We are in the habit of bringing a Hebrew word every week. So our Hebrew word today is moreshet.
Right.
Sonia, would you like to tell us what moreshet is?
Yes, the Hebrew word moreshet comes from the verb Lareshet, which means to inherit. The root letters are Reishin Tav, which means web or network. I thought that historically and traditionally are held within a web, which is part of a network. All of our beliefs and our love as part of the Meshulash Hazaav, the golden triangle, if you want, the God of Israel, the nation of Israel, and the land of Israel, means in Hebrew, Elohei Israel, Am Israel, and Eretz Israel. By way of Moreshet, we move our tradition, wisdom of our sages, and everything from our past forward through each generation to come. Actually, like in English, it is have the same root and the same meaning. Interesting enough, this word and the root in English and Hebrew are the same, and it's something very unusual.
Wow. Moreshet. I like that.
Lareshet.
Lareshet. What will we inherit today?
We will find out with our special guest.
We have our special guest today. We love having guests, and we're really glad that we keep finding some really, really talented people and really interesting people. Rabbi David comes to us today from Manchester, Temple Israel. He's the rabbi at Temple Israel. He's a graduate of Hebrew College Rabbinical School. He has studied law and international affairs. And he speaks four languages, I understand. Rabbi David was born and raised in Panama City, in Panama. And he is a descendant from Spanish Portuguese Jews in the Caribbean, going back 300 years. And you might, counting that, might bring us down to around, I think some people know around here, Columbus, maybe. We'll find out. Today we're going to talk to Rabbi David about his heritage, and we're going to learn a little bit about Sephardic Judaism. Shalom, Boker Tov, Rabbi David.
Boker Or, Shalom. Thank you very much for having me here.
It's a pleasure. You haven't come, well, you've come from far, and you haven't come from far. So we're going to find out. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and your ancestry, your genealogy, which is going back 300 years, as you said?
Yes, well, I can track my family tree. Actually, I have in my office. Goes back from, I think, 17th century, beginnings of 18th century. And as far as I can track, my direct lineage, they come from Holland. They were escaping from the Spanish Inquisition. Holland was a Jewish-friendly country. And after that, with the new continent was opening so many opportunities for these traders, they went to the Caribbean, San Tomas, Curaçao, the Dutch Caribbean. They were in the trade business and oranges and all kinds of stuff. And later on, they keep moving. And eventually, some of my family ended up in Costa Rica and Panama. Actually, my great-grandfather, my grandmother's grandfather, actually, is registered as the first Jew in Costa Rica ever. So it's quite a...
Wow, that's yeah. Impressive.
Yes.
How can you keep track? You know, it's something that I am always asking myself, because about my family, I don't think that I am able to go more than my father, grandfathers. Yes. And the grandmother. How can you keep track in such a long time, you know?
I found, I used to make fun, if you read Lord of the Rings, they say hobbits love family trees. And I call these Sephardic Jews, they're like hobbits. They love their family trees. I remember growing up, there's a part, like there's books of family trees and everything. They don't care much about the present or the future. It was such a, they do, but it was such a, some link of tradition was knowing your family tree, where you were coming from, and it gave them a sense of belonging. I also think a lot of these Jews were, they were elbow with nobility, especially in Spain, and they also had this way of tracking who they were.
They had the money.
They had. Yeah, they came from educated and rich places sometimes, yes.
Were the
almost
Jews...
almost always the Sephardic... a community which came from Spain and Portugal. They've been very educated, very rich, and probably this is the answer.
Yeah, I don't know what happened in the way, but I'm kidding.
So tell us a little bit about maybe Spain, what it was before the expulsion, and then how did the expulsion sort of come about, and where did everybody go? How did, you know, they had to leave, and... How did they decide where to go? Where did they go? All of that.
Well, Jews had been in Sfarad, even in biblical times, we've been around there. You know, we usually think of geography as the lines imposed on, like, well, Spain suddenly happened, but the land was always there. One day it just happened to be called Spain. The kingdoms were unifying in Spain. It was not one big Spain. And as a matter of fact, I've heard the people who made the Shidduch, the unifying of the king Fernando de Aragon, Ferdinand, uh-huh. and Isabella, were Jews. There's two Jews who wanted to have, think about it, if you have a unified kingdom.
The matchmakers.
Yeah, but it was a matchmaking also had to do with some business. You would have one single state, you have no taxations, so free flow. That at the end didn't work very well because the kings together, king and queen, especially she had these ideas of, let's unify this country under one religion. And it was the Inquisition then you had. It was a fundamentalist way of practicing religion then. And for some reasons, they say, well, Jews have to go convert or get out of here. Which most
Jews... Seems like the usual story.
The usual story, sadly.
Having in mind also that Isabella... She wasn't a Christian from the beginning.
No, that's right. That's right.
So this is why she was so determined to have only one religion, probably.
Yeah, she fell in love. I don't know what it is. Yeah. So a lot of Jews had to go. Some of them converted or went through a period that they were crypto Jews. They were in publicly adopted Spanish names and they went to church, but home. Undercover, they had their Jewish ways. As a matter of fact, if you go to a synagogue in the New World, one of the early ones, for example, if you go to Curaçao, the synagogue, the floor has sand. And people would say, oh, it's because it's on the beach or something. But actually, this sand tradition, I saw it also in the synagogue in Jamaica. They have sand in the floor. It's not because it's a beach synagogue. It's because they used to put sand on the cellars or in the basements where they would pray in secret. So the sand will muffle the sound, you know, because it was wood planks that will make noise when you have a congregation of more than 10 people in the same place. By sand, it's completely soundless, and that's where they would pray.
Ah, that's the first time I've heard something like that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Little things that we start inheriting. For example, another one I heard from crypto Jews story. This one, I think, was in Mexico when later on they moved. There was a virgin, a statue of Virgin Mary in front of a house, and these crypto Jews would enter and kiss the foot of the Madonna, the Virgin, every time coming in and out, in and out. One day they found out inside the foot there was a scroll of mezuzah, a parchment where we put on the doors. We kiss every time we enter or exit the house. So they were kissing not exactly the food, but the script inside. So that tells you a little bit about this setting the Jews were living.
Inventivity.
Yeah, very creative. Yeah, mother of all. So, and I've heard also traditions in places in Mexico, they play with some kind of cevivón, but with more sides during Christmas time and little things like that.
Ah, wow, that's great. We're off to a good start. We have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Rabbi David Cohen Henriquez, I didn't say your whole name before, and about Sephardic Judaism.
En el café de amanecer hay luces de colores. En el café de amanecer hay luces de colores. Así está mi corazón, quemado de amores. Así está mi corazón, quemado de amores. Tres de la noche yo pasé con todos mis amigos. Tres de la noche yo pasé con todos mis amigos. En tu ventana yo pasé sonando mandolino. En tu ventana yo posí, sonando mandolino.
1590 WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
Is America losing power? I'm Bill O'Reilly. The Talking Points memo is next. Temperatures are falling, and so is the price of the original Sun Heat electronic infrared heater. For a limited time, own the Sun Heat 1500 for just $449. when you buy direct at sunheat.com. Or receive a $50 manufacturer rebate, good at any authorized Sunheat dealer. Don't wait until the snow flies. Get your safe, soft, comfortable Sunheat today. For details, please go to sunheat.com. Do you owe back taxes? Being audited? Have several years of unfiled returns? Whatever your tax-related problem, the former IRS agents and tax professionals at Taxmasters can help solve your problem today. So please call 1-877-202-7222. Taxmasters will get between you and the IRS. You can call them at 1-877-202-7222 or go to txmsdr.com. Taxmasters will help solve your tax problems. Talking Points believes that the United States is at a crossroads. The U.S. dollar is in deep trouble because of the massive debt America has run up, and that has eroded confidence in the U.S. economy. Foreign investors are not as likely to buy U.S. securities. Once a country declines economically, its power is obviously on the wane as well. President Bush made a huge mistake with Iraq. That vicious conflict eroded our military power and will cost us more than $700 billion. Also, the Bush administration failed to oversee shady financial transactions, causing the economy to collapse last year. Now, President Obama and Congress are spending an incredible amount of money, money the country does not have. Also, the president's foreign policy is considered weak by some. So America needs to turn around and fast. If it doesn't, a very steep decline could be on the horizon. That is a memo. I'm Bill O'Reilly on Westwood One.
Many calls. Many clicks. And yet, just one call to 1-888-693-NDEP or one click to www.yourdiabetesinfo.org gets you the free diabetes information you need. The National Diabetes Education Program makes it easier than ever. Get free information on living with diabetes, tips to prevent or delay type 2 diabetes, and how to help loved ones manage the disease. Just one call to 1-888-693-NDEP. Just one click to www.yourdiabetesinfo.org. One call, one click. The National Diabetes Education Program, your source for free diabetes information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Thanks for supporting the local businesses you hear advertised and highlighted every day on 1590 WSMN.
On WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk with Israel is Real. We're two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Again, I want to remind you, we're always fundraising, and we've reached our goal of 2,000, but we still have 3,600 more to go. So please visit our website and find out how to help us out to stay on the air at israelisrael.weebly.com, israelisrael.weebly.com. And you can always email us at israelisreal1590@gmail.com, israelisreal1590@gmail.com. We are really grateful for your support, because without your support, we're not on the air, as I just mentioned. And we are very grateful for Vern Main and his ongoing support. Countries depend for much of their success and security on their intellectual prowess and advanced technology. Many companies from here and abroad depend on the patent attorneys at Verne Main and Associates to obtain U.S. or global patent protection for their new ideas. Verne Main and Associates is an intellectual property law firm right here in Nashua. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Verne Main and Associates at their offices on 100 Main Street in Nashua or on the web at vernmain.com. That's vernmaine.com, vernmain.com. And we are speaking today with Rabbi David Cohen Henriquez, the Rabbi of Temple Israel, Manchester, New Hampshire, and also coming from Panama, about his Sephardic heritage. So we were mentioning before the break about being in Spain and being undercover in Spain.
That's right.
And coming out of Spain. Can you continue with that conversation?
Well, those Jews who decided not to go through the charade or having to live in disguise decided to leave. The ones who remain, there's a term which I don't like. It's called marranos, which means swine. Mm-hmm. Those who had converted to Christianity just to pretend they were Christians, but they were truly Jewish. What I don't know where the term comes from Jews calling them like that or from Christians calling them like that. I don't know.
They are anusim in Hebrew.
Anusim, that's right. But those who remained Jewish decided to go to other places where the doors will be open. I think they went to Portugal, but Portugal briefly, 2 years after, also was part of the Inquisition. The ones who went to Holland was a Jewish-friendly country, which, by the way, most countries opened the doors for Jews with all this medical knowledge and banking, all this knowledge they brought, especially commerce. These countries were successful. So kicking the Jews out of the country was one of the worst ideas for Spain back in the day. The Dutch and some other countries saw the advantage of that and how good these people would bring to them. Eventually, they were looking for new lands, and they arrived to the new continent. And the first places the Jews arrived was in Recife, in Brazil. And later on, they started arriving to the Caribbean, also to later on what it would be founded as New Amsterdam, which would later be New York. Mm. The center of this Jewry was actually in Curaçao, where there's letters they would send money to congregations, including in New York. Like, who knew how the world changes so fast? There's Sefer Torah, the Torah books, whatever questions of halakha, of decision-making in Jewish law, was done through the rabbis of the Caribbean, actually. It was the center of the new world and the link to the old one as well.
Wow, it's a nice history. Tell
it's
us
a nice piece of history.
Yeah,
right?
It's an important piece of history, yeah. Actually. So, the Jews have arrived now in South America and in New York, and how did you get to Panama?
Well, again, doing business and trades, and Panama this is way before the canal, but it had the geographical structure. You can go from the Atlantic to the Pacific. Nowadays, actually, by car, you can go from one to the other in an hour. So it's a great trade place. And it was also centric. And historically, back in that day, it was also a lot of like world trade fairs in a way, you know, like but people would come with new merchandise. And so Jews were there. And little by little, they started settling in Panama. And now talking modern day, like especially 1903, it's when Panama gets the official independence from what it was going to be United States of South America. That was the Bolivar's dream to have, you know, instead of tiny states all over the place, one big. By 1903, they decide that doesn't work and they have their own independence, a tiny country. A lot of Jews were behind actually supporting this independence. They banked. They also made contacts with Washington in order to support the independence, which was actually something also with economic interests because it was already the talks of creating a canal, like, and it was going to be influenced by the United States. So basically, it was like politics, you know, a little bit of economic, a little bit of personal interests. And so I think it worked out much better at the end to have an independent state. Then this was the first community was from the Spanish Portuguese Jews. Actually, the synagogue where I belong there, it's older than the country. The country was 1903, but the synagogue has 130 years old plus. It was when they were still affiliated. No, they've been there for centuries. Later on, around the 40s and 50s, there's a second big migration, Jewish migration, coming from the Arab countries. A lot of Syrian Jews, mainly from the city of Aleppo. And then later on, during World War II, there's another community in smaller groups of Ashkenazi Jews end up there. Ashkenazi Jews ended up in many other places, like Costa Rica, for example. It's mainly Ashkenazi Jews. Some other countries I've gone to, and I know there's a lot. The presence is much bigger. For some reason, Panama had majority of Sephardim, of both types of Sephardim. Like, what they call Sephardi Tahor, the ones with the purely Spanish.
Samartet.
Yeah, and then the ones who brought with the Arab culture, in a way, Arab Jews.
Was there a blending?
Actually, the Sephardic community from Spanish Portuguese having been there for centuries, and it being a very open country, a lot of them assimilated. We were talking a little bit about assimilation before. So you'll see a lot of last names that you first hear, and it's like, oh, that's what we call in the United States, that's a Latino last name, where it's like, but a lot of these names were actually Jewish. If you hear my name, Enriquez, Cohen Enriquez, that's actually a name they brought from Spain. There's many names, Toledano, Fidanque, Maduro, Gomez. Actually, most names that ended up with EZ, which will be all the Latin American names you'll speak here today, a lot of that, the source of ending up with EZ is the equivalent of Ben in Hebrew, son. Enriquez would be the son of Henry, and Rodriguez would be the son of Rodrigo. And this came from Jewish traditions as well. At some point, there were Jewish names. Later on, it became very popular. If you open a phone book in Latin America, you'll see pages and pages of last names who at some point were Jewish.
So why you became a rabbi after all? You are a lawyer by your profession.
Yeah, I'm international affairs. I dropped law after 4 years. Almost there.
Almost there.
I went to a different type of law.
Right.
Yeah.
You went back to your roots.
Yes. Well, actually, no. Let me go back to the history then. We had in Panama, by 1955, we opened the first Jewish day school. It was called Albert Einstein Institute. It was the year he died, and what a great Jew. You know, it was a school. He's Jewish. He's a great mind, scientific mind. So nowadays, just to jump ahead in time, there's three Jewish day schools, depending on levels of observance. There's a liberal one, orthodox one, very orthodox one. You know, it's like three levels. There's the biggest kosher supermarket, I think, outside of Israel. It's in Panama, or the biggest kosher distribution. There's a couple in a small city that you can find five or six kosher restaurants, and it's one of the countries with less Jewish assimilation in the world. I think it's the third or fourth. It's actually growing really fast. So the Jewish presence was always there. Since day 3 to 17, I went to Jewish day school. On weekends, I went to Tnuat Noar Maccabi Bepanama, which was the youth movement. Nowadays, it's in the process of closing, but there's a new youth movement coming out called Noar. There's B'nai B'rith, Wizo, everything was there. Being in school, you know, I was not so interested. I loved Jewish history. It was one of my best classes, but not a part of prayer, all that stuff. I was like, you know, a little rebellious against it. As I was in school, after a couple of years, I decided I wanted something more meaningful. You know, I loved law, but I realized what I was doing was just, it wasn't curing the reasons. Let me go back. If you could teach Torah or the teachings of Judaism, you would not need to have the laws. It's almost like a reaction law. You know, somebody kills, therefore you do this. Somebody steals, therefore you do this. Why not go before that? Like, try to instill in people's mind, you should not kill, you should not steal, you should not lie to others. You would not need all the other part of law. So I went a little further and I went to God's law in a way, or people's spiritual laws, which, and then has a little bit of history, a little bit of psychology, a little bit of sociology. So it was fascinating. Basically, what moved me Jewishly was study, studying.
And I think that this is, in my mind, it's maybe the best motivation that you can have when you are going to learn, because it is so interesting you and it's so deep in your soul. So,
Yes.
Your name is Cohen Henricus. Are you a Kohen? Are you from the tribe of Aaron, as we say?
Yes. And actually, I was watching a documentary the other day about sending your genetic, your DNA samples, and they would tell you, and how, because it runs on the men, how many men all around the world could follow the laws, their genetic Kohanim, basically. Although I get the honors nowadays, there's few things you get privileges by being a Kohen. In most of the synagogues I've grown, or like the liberal synagogues, they've made it a little bit more democratic, so they don't give you like the Kohen Aliyah, like going to the Torah only, or special invitation for the Birkat Hamazon, for the prayer after the blessing after eating. But still, it's fun to, you know, say the hello and with the hands, kind of a Mr.
Spock. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah, I'm also from the Kohen line, and my father had done some research and is involved in some research with the DNA, so maybe you can connect with him to find out. But what they did find out is that in the DNA there is a particular gene that seems to be common with just the Kohanim.
Yes.
So they're in process of discovering this, but it's an interesting thing. And truthfully, I think we should still give those honors. I'm not so for that democratic way, but I'm just one little congregant.
Maybe when we find there is something different in the genes, then people would accept, you know what, we should give them some, but until we know what exactly is that power gene or something. Yes, definitely.
So we need to fall back on the science a little bit longer and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I think we have to break again. We'll be back again with Rabbi David Cohen Henricus from Temple Manchester, Temple Israel in Manchester. Blah, blah, blah. So, this is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk.
El amor sayo lleva sobresayo y un gibo d'alta nación camisa de Holanda lleva sirma y perla al cabezón el amor
1590 WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
In southern New Hampshire, there's a variety of news and talk programming on your radio, and here on 1590 WSMN. We know from time to time you have questions about programming and comments you'd like to pass along to us. Now you can just email us at any time at info@WSMNradio.com. That email address is info@WSMNradio.com. Use it whenever you like. And thanks for listening to Nashua's News and Talk, 1590 WSMN.
Hi, I'm Chris Noth. When I was just 9 years old, I lost my father in a car accident, leaving my mom to care for me and my two brothers. A single working mother, she did a great job of providing for us, but her job was made a lot easier because my dad had life insurance. It helped us survive during tough times and allowed my mother to put three sons through college. If the worst were to happen, would your family be okay? That's a question all of us need to ask ourselves, especially now when so many people are struggling. Life insurance is not something we want to have to think about. But the fact is, nearly 70 million adult Americans don't have that safety net. And that's just unacceptable. I'm proud to be working with an educational group to get people thinking about this important issue. Be smart and plan ahead. Your family's future is too important to leave to chance. Visit lifehappens.org for more information.
A public service message from the nonprofit Life Foundation.
You can make a big impression without your seatbelt, so why don't you buckle up?
Seatbelts are too uncomfortable and restrict my freedom of movement.
Maybe. Of course, in a car crash, without your seatbelt, you would be free to smash into the steering column, slam into the dashboard, or crash through the windshield. This kind of freedom can be very uncomfortable.
But seatbelts wrinkle my clothes.
Sometimes, but sitting also wrinkles clothes. Wearing clothes wrinkles clothes. Flying through a windshield, however, really wrinkles clothes.
Hey, I'll never be involved in a crash. I'm a good driver.
That's nice. Unfortunately, good drivers can be hit by bad drivers, drunk drivers, or by other good drivers who make serious mistakes. Very few people plan to be in a crash.
But I'd be too embarrassed to ask my friends to use their seatbelts.
In 2004, more than 125 people died in car crashes in New Hampshire. Not one person died from embarrassment. Why risk it? Always buckle up.
This message is sponsored by the New Hampshire Department of Transportation and the New Hampshire Highway Safety Agency in cooperation with the New Hampshire Association of Broadcasters.
The American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee is a nonprofit international humanitarian aid organization celebrating its 95th anniversary. Headquartered in New York City, we serve people in more than 70 countries. JDC transforms communities, reaching out to hundreds of thousands of people in need by providing relief during crisis and rescue from danger. For information, log on to jdc.org. That's jdc.org.
Hi, it's Doug Steffen. Listen to Good Day early mornings on 1590 WSMN.
Nashua's News and Talk.
La rosa en florece en el mes de mayo. Pilicos cantan en el árbol de la flor, de mayo se asentan los que sufren del amor, de mayo se asentan los que sufren.
We're back with WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We're Rachel and...
This is Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. We're on the air every Friday from 9 to 10 in the morning. And we're talking today, we're continuing our discussion with Rabbi David Cohen Enriquez. And we're talking about Sephardic Judaism. Before we continue, though, we'd like to just thank one of our sponsors again and hear what they have to offer. This is Vision.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel and informs you of how its technical advanced personality benefit you? Did you know that Israel is the first in the world in the biotechnology to receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities? Please visit Vision's website at www.NewHampshireForIsrael.org. That's www.NH4Israel.org.
I'd also like to thank today and remember that we have George Papoulias today, our on sound, and
hi, how are you?
Is hooked up the webcams, right, George?
We are connected. We're like Radio Shack here. We have the stream working. You can also be seen on the webcam on WSMNRadio.com.
Thank
so you can look at us too, I understand. So, yeah, our beautiful faces, but even more beautiful face, Rabbi David.
Have the beautiful face to match the beautiful voice.
And we've been also listening to Ladino music, by the way, from sung by Nurit Hennig. She is an Israeli who specializes in Ladino music and was my voice teacher one time. So I thank you, Nurit. Rabbi David, where were we? I'm so infatuated that I can't even remember what we were saying. So
we should talk about Israel.
Israel, about yes. Israel.
So what is this wandering Jews relationship with Israel?
I'm glad you asked.
Would you like an answer?
We were always talking about the relationship with a land. We call it motherland or fatherland. It's definitely coming out from. You both describe even Israel is your motherland in a way because you grew up there or you migrated there really young. The question is, for example, if you're from Latin America and Panama, from my father's side, and my mother is from Brazil, so I already have two allegiances there, right? Mm. Then I come to the United States. So it's father and mother lands, let's say. Then I come to the United States, which is in a way like a girlfriend, like a new relationship I'm starting to develop. I'm exploring myself. I'm exploring this beautiful land. The way is very different from where I grew up in a way. Then what Israel? I see Israel sometimes as your lovely grandmother or grandfather. You know, you have possessions of them. You might have like a watch or some stories or letters. And there's something that you want to know more and more. Sometimes it's more ancient than you'll probably realize. But you go there and that hug that's going to give you, that love, it's unconditional. Even if sometimes Israel, you know, grandma or grandpa are cranky or have a lot of issues today, whatever it is, it has problems. But it's something that comes with age, with time, with circumstances. But you love it anyway. And you want to give it the biggest hug. So that's in a way my relationship with Israel. I read daily about Israel. Israel 2,000 years ago. Israel 500 years ago. The Israel of their patriarchs. The modern state of Israel with the technology, which I'm a big technological lover. Like if it wasn't for Israel here, we wouldn't have the technology for cell phones. So I don't know what I would have. really, but It's something, it's an experience, you know, when you have many lands, but there's still something about this tiny strip of land that connects you to many people, to many things, its languages, its flavors, everything.
I think you mentioned in addition to being a reality today, because it has been on and off a reality, but in addition, it's always been a love, an ideal, a part of our heart.
Yes.
Part of our hearts as Jews.
I'm very romantic and I idealize, and part of the reasons I sometimes get disappointed is like in a way of it's the crude reality. It's not the same thing as the romantic. You know, you can read about this beautiful Israel of old, and then you see the media contaminating so many things that it's not daily war. And as I try to explain people, if you saw the size of this place, you wouldn't imagine it as countries fighting. It's more like neighborhoods fighting, you know. it really is like you think of an enemy, you have to go in the U.S., for example, you have to go get into a plane or into boats and travel many, many miles. Here's crossing a street or two and you're there. And it's the size, sometimes we don't see it on an image or on just a radio news about Israel.
You've been in Israel.
Yeah, a couple of times. Last time I was 3 years ago, I think, 2 years and a half. I was there for 3 months. This trip was intense Ulpan. I was just doing Hebrew all day. I missed my Sundays, I have to say. When you don't have Sundays there,
right.
It's a Monday.
Six days a week.
Yom Rishon is the first day, so you better right. start. But it was quite an experience. 5 hours and a half daily plus homework. you really get into the language. But the teacher was like, you know what? Stop doing homework and go see the land. That's why you're in Israel. You know, go talk with a taxi driver, the person at the market. Just go out.
Yeah, yeah. So you really get to taste Israel
yes.
and experience Israel. So, it's not always fun, but most of the time it's exciting and adventuresome. Interesting and curious.
The first time I was there, I was 16. I went with a youth group movement from Panama. We were around 60-something teenagers, which is something I advocate strongly. If you can support groups that send young people to Israel, it's good to go as you're young and you're more impressed by things. One of the most impressive things, and even as adult would impress, it's that I went in the same few days, week, from skiing on snow, first time. Only time I ever skied was in Israel, and I live in New Hampshire, so that's gonna change this week. I'm gonna go skiing for the first time after I skied in Israel so many years ago. And then on that same week, I went to the desert, and the, you know, explore
the sand was
the sand, and then I was another day in a more very
that maybe remind you of the sand in Panama.
And then I went to a place that was very spring-like with the archaeology. So it's in a tiny place that has all these weathers, all these things to do in such a tiny place. That's impressive. That's something.
Yeah, so if you only have 1 week vacation, it's probably the best place to go.
Yeah.
You can experience everything.
You go to Eilat and you go to the beach and clubs, or you go you feel spiritual, you go to Jerusalem or Sfat. There's something for everybody there. That's the beauty of Israel.
And the relations with the Jews in Panama to Israel did you want to ask something, Sonia?
I said that for me it's like I would like to know how you have been impressed to go in the same streets that our ancestors went. You know, for me, this is the most impressive thing.
Mm-hmm. Not only the ancestors, but also seeing the streets names of every ancestor. But like you study Jewish history and you suddenly see like names of rabbis or philosophers or people who invented the modern Hebrew language or the names of the 12 tribes. And just saying like, ooh, I live in Rehov Ben Yehuda. I walked around there just like, wow, he spawned the whole life. He reconstructed the language with...
Or Shiftei Israel and Jerusalem.
Yeah, so every word has a... And that's the beauty of the Hebrew language as well. Every word, sometimes every letter or every shoresh, as you were explained today, every root, it's like resonant. It resonates. It's almost like playing a key on an instrument, but that key is similar to another tune you've heard before, and little by little you start putting all these words together, and they're all in the back of your head, either from a story on the Torah or from a medieval poem. It's been played for 3,000 years plus. So,
and this is why I always saying that it's not so hard to learn Hebrew.
No, it's if you're mathematical, you take three letters and then you start adding or taking out, and it is a little, it took me a couple of years, but it's a very elegant language. It's very mathematical in its structure.
Yes, it's a very structured language. Mm-hmm. This is what I am thinking. And this is why in a short time you are able actually to read even the newspaper, not understand 100%, but with 70, 75%, you are all set.
Yes, yes.
I wanted to ask you, Rabbi David, as a rabbi, how, if and how, does Israel influence your sermons, the talks you give at the services, at the worship services?
Well, actually, I've decided this month or two, we have now, for example, met the new shlicha of the Jewish Federation coming from Israel. We want to invite her to have more, to talk more with us about Israel, as well as special guests. I want to bring Israel more aware into the news, but it hasn't been a full part in my short time as a rabbi. It's been 5 months. I just landed. Mm. I graduated this year, actually, last year.
Oh, mazel tov, mazel tov.
Thank you. I just finished 11 years in school. So.
Wow.
So, but, you know, we're depending also on the season, also good times to talk about Israel or something that happens about Israel. Also, when you're entering more into the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy, we're approaching more at the enter. It's all about what happens when you enter the land. What happens when you enter the land? Right now, this week, actually, we're starting Shemot, the second book, which also is going to be very influential because it's about taking you out of Egypt and bring you to the land that I will promise you. So this will all also bring questions about, okay, nowadays, a lot of us are in this land, so now what do we do about it? So whenever the time and opportunity comes, there's so many things to talk when you're a rabbi. You know, there's the spirituality. You can take things from mysticism or rationalism from medieval times. So there's always space for everything. Hopefully soon we're going to start doing it more and more with support of the community.
Well, I hope you'll have us too, and we can do some fundraising at your temple.
Oh, that'll be great. That'll be great.
You know, Sonia, we usually give... a Devar Torah, you know, we give tell about the portion of the week. We had something here. I don't know. Should we let Rabbi David talk about Shemot? Do you think you want to say anything about Shemot?
You want me to read it?
You can either read it or give your own sermon.
Okay.
We'll give you a chance to prepare for tonight.
Well, I was actually writing yesterday about Shemot. I have four blogs I'm going to be writing. It's such a powerful, beautiful beginning. It's actually the anniversary of my bar mitzvah. So it's the first time I actually read from the
Torah. Mazal tov again.
Thank you. The first time I read from the Torah was from this parasha, so it's very, very meaningful to me. If you pay attention with the language of Shmot, it's sometimes, again, we're talking about notes that evoke another tune. If you hear the language, it's almost like the beginning of Bereshit, of the first book of Genesis. When Moses is born, it says that he was good. It was good, just as God said. You know, they say Moses was beautiful. Something was about it. The mother said it's good. There's also the sense of new beginnings happening, also with, for example, the word teva, like the basket where Moses was put, only appears in the story of Noah, and it's a flood and it's water, and again the world's gonna start again after that. So this new teva has somebody who's gonna bring a new dawn. It's not literally a new world. It's a new consciousness. It's the new world that's coming with a new consciousness. Is gonna be not only the children of Israel, as they're called. They're gonna go to receive the Torah. It's gonna be the people of Israel. So I think the big project. This book is just the preface. It's the beginning. It's gonna be a new awareness, bringing a system of teaching that's going to bring the vertical message, what God is up there doing, into the horizontal plane, creating a society, creating a structured order from individuals to family to the cult. So it's disconnecting from that old world we've seen in Bereshit, you know, the Egyptians and the Canaan and all the other Sumerian cultures with gods, and they pray to their ancestors and many, many things, animal worship. It's a new beginning. Which, by the way, it's also fantastic that it's the first chapter, very different from the other books. The main characters are all women. It signals you a new time. Right. You have Moses' mom, you have Miriam, you have
Shifra and Pua. Miriam.
Yeah, which is also the first recorded rebellion against authority, saying we're going to follow what's morally right and not what the authority is telling us to be right.
And you have the daughter of Paro, which is also going against his father.
Yeah. New times, women are part of the role of bringing new times, and that's where we are. 21st century, new times.
Amazing. Thank you so much. We'd like to thank Rabbi David Cohen Henriquez from Panama and also from Temple Israel in Manchester. And I would encourage people to go and meet you in person and to take part in your worship. And we are, again, this is Israel is Real. And by the way, if you look on the, I was going to say, how do you get in touch with you?
TempleIsraelNH.com. That's our website.
TempleIsraelNH.com. So again, we're Rachel and Sonia. This is Israel is Real. We're on the air every Friday from 9 to 10 in the morning at WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk.
New to the news of the day.
Because communication is the beginning of understanding.
1590 WSMN, Nashua.